following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland.
Greetings, salutations, aloha, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland, coming to you from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee. Hope it's going well for you. The flu is at epic proportions. We're reenacting the Spanish flu from 1918. We'll all be I kid. Actually, I make this joke, and I use that term loosely, because I'm not feeling all that well at this particular moment. I'm a little stopped up, but I'm okay. I got over it. The night before I taped all this, I was feeling just awful. Absolutely awful. Awful, I tell you. And I tell you what happened. I think I got a hold of the Beale Street crud. I was down on Beale for the International Blues Challenge Wednesday and Thursday of the thing. And Wednesday was just so bone damn cold. But, you know, and it's a proven fact that temperature means nothing when it comes to illness. I mean, you get sick from being around other people, and that's exactly what happened. I was in the throngs of humanity, hanging out with people I didn't need to be anywhere near, and most of you filthy bastards don't wash your hands or nothing, and I got down with something. But you know, I'm feeling fine. I'm good. I'm ready to go. I'm ready for a beer later. It's all good. I'm surviving. I will make it. Speaking of the IBC, today's program, it's going to be fun. We had the Memphis representatives of the solo duo competition, or challenge, I should say, Goodson and Taylor, guitar, harmonica, and vocals. And they were in the studio, and Jeff Janovitz and I, who hosts the Booze and Blues show, had these guys in, had a great time with them. If you missed that program, I've got it for you right here. We've cut it down for you to make it right, you know, if you know what I mean. So so all that is coming up. It's a bit longer than usual. If you look at the time cues on this show, you'll see that it's a bit beefy, but it's a good one. By God, you'll learn something. It's a lot of fun. It's coming up with Tyler Goodson and Jimmy Taylor next here from Radioland.
Keep calm and haunt on with Historical Haunts, Memphis Haunted Tour Company. Ancient burial mounds, yellow fever, maritime disasters, Victorian murders, and ghost stories are all a part of the Memphis dark history. Join Historical Haunts for a spirited night out on the Haunted Memphis Bus Tour, Haunted Pub Crawl, the Woodruff Fontaine House Ghost Tour, or one of our other spooky tours and events. Check out our website for all of the exciting ghost tours and ghost haunts at historicalhauntsmemphis.com.
Yeah, kids, we've got some live music here in the studio. As you can tell, there was a different voice there. Goodson and Taylor, and that's all right. No, Tyler Goodson and Jimmy Taylor here in studio tonight, the representatives for the solo duo category for the IBC, here representing Memphis here in studio.
Yeah, go home team.
Yeah, go home team. Yeah, I saw you guys perform in that round. I was one of the judges.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know if you're supposed to tell people that.
I was a judge.
We'll leave the tip at the door.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there was me and like three or four other people. So you know, my one vote may have mattered or not. Apparently, it did. But you guys put on a hell of a show. It was a lot of fun. It was fresh. It was different. It was good. Of course, we've come to expect some pretty good stuff out of your ass anyway. So
wow, for sure. Hey, thanks, man. I just of course Tyler Goodson, I'll introduce him, and Tyler's one of the younger players. I'll call him because I'm an older guy. But he's been playing quite a while, and he played on our last album, the Little Boys Blue album, which was the Tennessee that we did down in
Fame. We'll play some cuts off of that later tonight. Yeah.
And but, yeah, man, I'm glad to be able to hook up with him. And I've been trying to get him to do this for several years. He moved to Nashville, and then Steve Patterson and I got in a couple years, won the Memphis. And we made the semis twice, I think, for the Memphis Blues Society. And it was a great, and I think the last year is when we were talking about Little G Weevil won it as the solo act, and that was a hard year. That was a lot of great competition that year, man. It was everybody. So
we it's always to tough down there for this. The IBC is a big, that's a big game, man.
It really is. And it's getting tougher because people are, they're honing their skills, and then you're starting to get signed artists showing up for this thing, man. People that coming out and think, man, I've listened to that guy many a time on the radio, and then, you know, maybe he was signed 5 years ago, and all of a sudden he's back out and trying to get it going again, and then he shows up at the IBC, you know, and Wow. So, but yeah, man, we're just glad to be here.
No, it's good. Thank you for representing our fair city in this competition,
for sure.
or this challenge, I should say, as it is. Because it, I mean, it really is. I mean, there's that negative connotation about it being a competition as opposed to a challenge, and it does turn into a beautiful networking event for everybody.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's really the who was it? Was it
Matt Isbell from Ghost Town Blues Band? So yeah. Just getting to the challenge is actually the you've already won.
Right.
You know, just getting to be there is kind of. Because now you're, you know, there's content buyers, there's, I mean, just, you know, the CD on your side
sure.
and all, for those people who don't know it, but, yeah, there's, you know, that's where content buyers are, that's where producers are, they get some chance to get exposed to you guys.
Sure.
I think that's, you know, but yeah, that's awesome, man. I can't believe you guys,
Yeah, we're excited about it. I mean, we, it's, you know, what Steve and I tried to do 4 or 5 years ago as a duo, and what Tyler and I do in his style, what he brings to the table,
right.
You'll hear later. His whole influence of Elmore James, and
I think we heard some of it earlier.
I mean, yeah, his slide playing. So me being able to hook up with him and put what influence I can on him and follow him, I'm just glad to be here with him, man. So yeah.
So great. Was the IBCs? Was that the goal for this project? Or
no? Just... Well, you know, we've been playing off and on.
Right.
I've known Tyler forever, you know, and like I said, he's kind of did the Nashville thing, and I let him tell his story, but. You know, basically, we've just always been friends. And last year when we decided to do our Tennessee album, mm-hmm. we'd cut a few tracks down here with Brad Webb, and we had 3 or 4 songs we really liked and we were going to keep. But I've told the story before, just by sheer accident, we ended up at Fame for a couple of days because they ran a Christmas special. You know, it was Christmas time, and my wife gave me the credit card, and she let me run it. So I swiped the card and called them and booked it, man.
Oh, you know? My God.
So,
hell yeah.
Studio A with an engineer for 8 hours in 2 days, you know. And it was a package deal, man. So I had a great Christmas that year.
Yeah, you did. That's
but
awesome.
I honestly was sitting home in October of, I guess this was of 15, watching the Netflix special about Muscle Shoals.
Right.
And then I liked them on Facebook, and then that special came up in December. And here we are in January, man. We're down there playing. You know, it was during the week. You know, a lot of people work. Normal people work during the week. You
right.
know, I have a business, so I'm a little flexible. And my son wasn't working at the time. He was still on mom and dad. You know, he's in law school now. But he and I and Tyler and a couple other guys just hooked up and went down there in 2 days. And we finished this album in 2 days. And so he's all over this album. And we actually did one original duo cut on that album, I think he'll play after a while. But so, you know, that's kind of where we started. And he's in and out helping us with Little Boys Blue. We've still got the band going. John Holliday's mainly playing with us since my son is out for 3 or 4 years, and hopefully he'll stay. But we're just having fun. Man.
Yeah.
Having fun.
You guys always seem to have a good time. And, I again, just from what we heard.
During the warm-up.
Warming up.
Yeah.
Sorry, I keep hitting the mic for our listeners there. Man, that guitar sounds great. We were just talking about that amp. Between the two of you, it was... That's a hell of a sound, man. I can't wait to get it out there.
He brought a baritone guitar in here, and you just about came out of your pants.
Well, you know.
He sings baritone some, too.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Get an Elvis grind going in.
It's a little early for all of that, I guess.
A few more Miller Lights.
Have you guys thought about taking this between the two of you and laying just some stuff down just that way?
Yeah, we that's what we spoken about it. We would have loved to have had at least maybe a 5 or 6 song EP by IBC, and that was a goal. But of course, on a business and my schedule, and plus we've been playing as my group, and then Tyler's playing at least 3 to 4 times a week. Tyler is a professional musician. That's what he does for a living. So
he's
got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
So just right. trying to get together to do our thing between what I'm doing and what he's doing,
right.
you know. But that's exactly what we want to do, and we you know that's our goal. And so we'll see where this takes us, but we'd love to continue the duo thing together.
Cool.
Why not? Yeah, this may open up some doors for you, too. With it being a network thing that IBC is and all that fun stuff, yeah, you don't know what's going to come down the road for you. Yeah.
I think a little bit over 200 gigs last year, and like 10% of them were blues-oriented, so
yeah.
What other stuff do you play?
Metal.
R&B, right.
He's playing some speed metal.
Death
over
metal,
there.
Yeah. I can tell because of Dan Electro's.
Yeah, Dan Electro's.
What they're made for.
That's right. he's got a Motorhead tribute band he's working.
Yeah, I actually play pedal steel some. I play in nursing homes, churches, everywhere.
Wow.
Oh, that's
anywhere
cool.
Anywhere that pays, right?
Anywhere that pays.
Sometimes when they don't.
I can relate.
Any other instruments? Just pedal steel guitar.
I play some bass, but mainly just string.
Just anything stringed, huh? Yeah. I had a guitar teacher tell me once, "Man, get you a cheap used banjo somewhere, string it, tune it like a guitar. Now you're a banjo player. That's how you can get more gigs if you're a working musician."
That's true. It's a good point.
Yeah, you can go do whatever you can to get that gig.
The IBCs start the 16th. Is that right?
From Tuesday.
Yeah, the introduction.
The introduction is Tuesday.
International showcase is on Tuesday the 16th.
I gotcha.
But the competition
is on Wednesday through the end of the week. Yeah.
So a week from this Wednesday, coming
you start
Wednesday.
You start on Wednesday. You know, the actual IBC.
Right.
The grand entrance is started on Tuesday.
Right. Right. And there'll be a lot of jams. We were talking about that before. I forget, after the competition that starts on Wednesday, there's a jam every night that goes, so some of them go all night long. But we'll be there on Thursday night at the Tap on Bill hosting a jam. We hosted it last year and had a packed house. It was awesome. Matter of fact, the third place winner, Ray Gordon, ended up coming, and she was phenomenal. Had a full horn section, but we're sponsored by Memphis Amps. This guy's out in Colorado, and he specializes in harmonica amps, and I've been endorsed by him for the last 4 years. So we'll be there on the 18th, that Thursday night. If anybody's down at the IBC, come on out. It'll be a big time, and all the harp players that are coming to IBC will be there to play harp. It'll be it's a harp jam, you know.
Oh, that'll be big, yeah.
Guitar players come to be the backup guys,
but
that night's for the harmonica players, which is rare, you know.
That's pretty cool, though.
But it'll be a harp jam, and it'll be fun, and we'll be playing through Memphis Amps, naturally, and it'll be a good time.
George Dudley says, "See you guys there. Hope we're not in the same room with me and Bruce."
Man, George and Bruce are great. I tell them I do too. So that's both ways.
Well, what do you say we get it going here? Let's play us a tune before we get into the break. I've got some stuff off that Tennessee record we'll play as well tonight.
Sure.
Yeah. In fact, I've got Health Insurance Blues queued up.
If that'd you be go, awesome.
We'll do that out of the break. And
yeah. That'd be awesome. So you want us to play first?
Yeah. You're here.
Yeah.
You hauled all that gear down here. Didn't do it for nothing.
We got a little song called "You Got a Lot of Love." Please don't spread it all over town.
Nice.
Oh my! She got the jack.
Town. Well, you got a lot of love, babe. Please don't spread it all over town. Well, that one thing I can't take, pretty mama, is a good looking mama running around. Brand new Cadillacs and brand new diamond rings. You know, baby, I'd buy you any doggone thing. Well, you got a lot of love, baby. Please don't spread it all over town. Well, that one thing I can't take, pretty mama, is a good-looking doggone woman running around. Thank you. long stay out late at night. Ain't any man knows, baby, you know I ain't just ain't right. Cause you got a lot of love, baby. Please don't spread it all over town. Well, there's one thing I can't take, pretty mama, is a good looking woman running around. One thing I can't take, pretty mama, is a good-looking woman running around.
Yeah. Is that you gonna trot that one out for the IBC, you think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, gotta have that one.
Getting ready for this thing, you spending some time working with a clock and understanding, what was it, 25 minutes you have? Is it
25 minutes, I think, during the normal competition. I think it's 30 minutes during the finals or semifinals. And then 20 minutes during the finals if you make it that far. I believe that's
Oh, my. Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, so you're all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Dude, you're killing a couple of tunes at that point.
Yeah. I've been married 36 years, so I'm good with time.
I'll be ready in a minute.
I'm okay. Very prompt.
Yeah, that's well. Yes, yeah, very good. Very good.
Tyler, don't know anything about that.
It's Goodson and Taylor, kids. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We're going to play a little cut off of the Tennessee record, Health Insurance Blues. Tell me about it.
Actually, it's a song that I had written, and normally this is the way it goes with anybody I collaborate with, because I'm a harmonic player, and when I have these tunes come in my mind, I teach myself the tune, I learn the lyrics, and then I try to convey it to a guitar player, and that's why playing with people like Tyler or John Holiday and my son Alex, you know, very few people, I get with a lot of guitar players, and they're sitting there going, where do you want me to go, you know, and so these guys are in tune with the blues, and when I would tell them about it, all of a sudden, you know, they would get the lick. And we want to do kind of a North Mississippi kind of feel.
Right.
A couple of songs when we were down at the Fane. You know, we wanted to have at least one song that was stripped down. And Tyler had this riff, you know, kind of this North Mississippi RL kind of thing, because he played with some of the Burnsides in the past. So he started the riff. I said, hey, man, I got lyrics for that. And we literally cut the song in one take out in the middle of the floor. And the guys that were in the band, we were laughing about that coming down here tonight. We'd cut the whole album. We were getting ready to go home that night, the last night. And I told the engineer, I said, man, we want to do something stripped down. Tyler had his resonator guitar. And my guys come out. One guy's shaking a damn egg, and the other guy's beating up, doing a
washboard.
A washboard.
Yeah.
And they're thinking we're like rehearsing, and we're cutting the thing. And so.
Oh, they were just.
They were just horsing around.
Oh, that's
and
hilarious.
We got running. He goes, hey, man, y'all going to cut that song? I said, man, we just did. So it was just like. I mean, that's the truth, you know? So this is what you got right here.
This
know?
Is it. All right.
Indie progressive rock has a home. Radio Memphis Prog Time with Dee and Phil. Monday nights at 7 Central on Radio Memphis.
And I went down to the doctor's home, and they turned me away. And I went down to the doctor's home, and they turned me away. That you ain't got no health insurance, man, and you're gonna have to pay. But I wore my blue cloth around my neck, put on my pot skin. I wore my blue cloth around my neck, put on my pot skin. Thought I did the right thing with that Washington machine. Hey, I got a freak existing condition. I got them lovely blues. I got a freak existing condition. I got them lovely.
love Fleetwood. Every doctor, he done told me, man, these things ain't no good for you. You won't feel good at all, baby. Lord, it turned me away. Hey, I went down to Dr. Moore. It turned me away. You ain't got no health insurance, man. Hey, you don't have pay. I ain't got no money, no job.
Boys Blue at Radio Memphis there from the Tennessee record and health insurance blues there with everybody that was hanging around the studio that afternoon, apparently, here on this Sunday here. We're about...
the guy with the egg shakers and the guy with the washboard.
Yeah, we're about 15 minutes or so from the top of the hour here on this Sunday evening. Thank you for tuning in. We know you have choices, but there ain't dick on TV, so thank you for tuning in.
That's right. At least, you know,
it's the Golden Globes. Let Mama have all that. You know.
Hey, Rick.
Yes, sir?
We lost our biggest competitor this year.
What did we lose?
Game of Thrones won't be on until 2019, so that's
really
at least 8 Sunday nights where more than 2 people will tune in.
Wow. Well, that's good to know. And the NFL, nobody's been watching
yeah,
that business.
Yeah, so know. See,
you know, and the Super Bowl, didn't everybody boycott and all that?
You can't say Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl. Sue me.
You're not supposed to say Super Bowl. You can't even say the big game.
Can't say that either. Can't say the big game either.
Or maybe that's what they were substituting the Super Bowl.
In my radio career, we had all sorts of weird ways to get around it. We had soup, like chicken noodle,
right?
Soup or bowl, you know.
Oh, geez.
It was dumb. Super Bowl. The big game, whatever the hell it is that no one's going to watch. Nobody gives a shit. It's the Patriots. They'll win it again. Next, move along. It's all fixed. It's all rigged. We're just puppets.
I don't even keep up with football.
Games, I don't either.
So I can't speak to us whether or not it's rigged.
My wife does. The immigrant does. She gets angry.
American football?
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah. She likes the soccer, too. She likes anything sports. She's that way.
Yeah, but people who like soccer, like, really like soccer.
Oh, yes.
And it's on TV. Like, whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
And it, you know.
I have two neighbors, one next door to me and one a few doors down, and they're both from England. And one likes Albion, and the other one likes Manchester United. And these two... are hilarious. They yell at each other from across the yards while they're raking the yard. You know? It's big fun. Yeah.
They're serious about their football.
Oh my God! I live around the corner from the Celtic Crossing, and on major match days they open at like 5 in the morning to get those because the games are alive and it's like 7 a.m. and they're down there drinking and carrying on, and by noon they're all shit-faced and they have no idea what the hell's going on. It's like, my man, it's Tuesday.
Now we know why they fight over there at the stadium.
Right,
all over.
Right. That's exactly why. In fact, last time I was in Dublin, we were walking through an area where a match had just let out.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I was caught up in a crowd of drunken Irishmen. Oh my God. It was the stereotypical fighting guys. I was ready for all hell to break loose. I'm trying to duck into a place to get out of the way. Oh my God. They're screaming and they're singing their songs and stuff. Oh, it was a trip.
Yeah.
What about you guys coming up? Were y'all like more musician types, or were you athletic or both? Or
well, I actually played football here at the University of Memphis.
Did
That's
you?
Where I met my wife. I came down in what 1980 when Richard Williams was here. And,
okay.
The year by Christmas is the year that Rex Dockery came in with Rocky Felker. Rocky's dad was my high school football coach, and Rocky was the coach at Mississippi State. He was actually at Texas Tech with Rex when they came and ended up going to MSU after that. But so I lasted that year, but I met my wife the first day of classes. She lived here in Memphis. She was raised out in she moved to Memphis in about the sixth grade, but went to Bishop Byrne, was out in Whitehaven. And I met her the first day of class, and 8 months later we got married. Hence, 35 years on the Tennessee album is our story.
Yeah.
Tyler's all over that. We might even play that later. But, we met at the University of Memphis. At that time, it was Memphis State. I can't get over
Memphis State.
Keith Lee was the basketball hero, and Dana Kirk was
Larry
Finch was assistant coach.
Baskerville Holmes, John Wilfong.
Even though I grew up in Brownsville, I've been coming to Memphis. I can remember coming down with my mother in Summer Avenue when I was 5 years old. That trip down the interstate, back when you didn't see a car for about 30 minutes. You could run 80 down the interstate in a car about as long as a boat, you know. And so,
do you remember, do you ever think there would come a time where University of Memphis football is what it is today?
No, it's gone through its stages, and I'll be just as honest. You know, I've gone through my stages of support because then I went to basketball and I'd heap for the basketball, and somebody'd say something about the football team, and I thought, but hey, man, I'm proud for them.
They had a hell of a year this year.
I didn't graduate there, but I went there. My parents had season tickets to that Tigers during the Keith Lee Dendekirk.
Right.
Oh man. So that was like, I went to a lot of those games. I remember big Jack Eaton and the whole, man, that was huge in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tigers football was always like, they play.
Yeah.
They play.
It's not to dog it. Not to dog it. It's just,
I was there.
Everybody, like all the money.
How adorable
that's
they
where
have
all the money
team.
Was.
All the money was in that basketball team.
Oh, sure.
The biggest thing that I can say that happened to me that year is the year that we played Tennessee in the Liberty Bowl.
It was
a nationally televised game, and I think we beat them that year on national TV.
Yes.
And I think it's one of like three games that we won that year.
And they
booted Williams out at
I think
mid-term.
Tennessee is still sore about that loss, too.
It was on national TV, and I got to dress out for that one game.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So,
I
toted a lot of Gatorade and a lot of crushed ice for everybody. a lot of towels, that kind of thing. But at least I had my uniform on.
You were there. You were ready to go in if they needed you, man.
It's like me in high school, man. I was like the scab defense guy for the seniors to beat the shit out of when they were running plays.
Scout team
you were the punching bag, were you?
Oh, yeah.
Gentlemen, get your ass in there. Oh, God.
I was not a remarkable player, except for maybe in my junior varsity year because I was bigger than a lot of the guys. But by the time I was a junior, the sophomores, I'm not, no, by the time I was, yeah, by the time I was a junior, the seniors were. Anyway, I'm a big guy, but I wasn't like, I wasn't like Superman, so. Yeah, it was fun.
I got you.
But,
That's why you got all these people holding their kids back 2 or 3 years now. Because, by the time I left high school at 17, by the time I was 19, I gained 40 pounds and was, it's just a lot of difference. But that's another reason why now today, man, they're men out there now. I wouldn't want to hit some little high school players. My gosh, they're growing them big everywhere now.
Hey, I saw that movie Concussion and just thought about it. It's like, how many times did I get my bell rung when I played football?
Yeah,
those guys. You're right. They're like super genetic beasts. Oh,
man.
Yeah.
They got it going. Everything is intense now, man.
Yeah.
And the blues is intense now.
Right.
The IBC is going to be intense.
Yeah, it is going to be intense. It always is.
Really, I mean, this day and age, it's just competition. Man.
Right. Well, we've talked about this before, about the sort of a renaissance in blues. You know, people are starting to pay more attention to it.
Absolutely.
And artists, more like rock guys, have turned around. Because I made the joke about, you know, of course, you playing speed metal and stuff, but... But you go to some of these jams, and there's a lot of these metal cats that are hanging out in the back going, I'd like to do that, but I'm scared to death.
Right.
You know.
Well, you know, but I do think it's evolving, and I'm glad of that, because I love the old stuff. I mean, we know where it came from.
Right.
I'm a huge fan of all the old stuff. That's where, you know, my biggest influence are all the old guys, the Junior Wells, the Muddy, all the harp players that play with Muddy Waters, Kim Wilson. You know, because I didn't start playing until I was 30.
Because Kim Wilson's such an old guy.
He's 67.
He's not that old.
It was like yesterday.
We're old guys now. So yeah, those guys are old guys.
I'm 55, so I'm one of those old guys.
I saw Tommy Shannon in Austin, Texas a couple weeks ago. You know, he's 72 years old.
Yeah.
Pardon my French.
Really?
Yeah, sir. He's 72.
I did not know that.
And a bona fide rock and roll Hall of Famer. But that he's one of the old guys now. I'll say, wait, that makes me one of the old guys.
I imagine Chris Layton is up there with him pretty close.
Oh, God. Yeah. If he still plays.
Well, yeah, he's with Kenny Wayne, man.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I saw him in Memphis at the BMAs last year. He was sitting with Jim Gaines. They always have the pre thing before the BMAs at the hotel across the street. Yeah. And I kept thinking, man, I've seen that guy before. And he was sitting Well, I had been down to Jim Gaines. I luckily got called down to his place to play on an Albert Cummings track
that
Jim was producing. Of course, Jim, if you know Jim Gaines, he produced everybody. Blues Travelers,
Santana,
Oh, sure.
And then all the blues guys, you know, all the big. So Tommy, Chris Layton's standing over there, and I'm thinking, like, who is this guy? And finally I nudged the guy. I said, who is that guy? He said, man, that's Chris Layton. That was Stevie Ray's drummer. That's him, you know. So I didn't go over there and slobber on him or nothing. But.
No.
Go all fangirl on the guy. And
Tommy Shannon's got a residence
gig. Can you sign my harp?
At Anton's in Austin. He plays like a 6:30. It's like a 6 o'clock show on Wednesdays.
Yeah, that's where you sent me that picture from that one time.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Did you get to see any of the Austin, like the Flanagan, Jimmy Vaughn, and Mike Flanagan? That, you know, they got a thing going on right now. They got a new album out.
We were there the week before Christmas, and it was kind of... We saw, what's her name? April's going to kill me.
Susan Tedeschi.
No.
Bonnie Raitt.
It'll come to me. She's a big name blues actress, and I can't remember her name for the life of me right now. I haven't seen her mom.
So I said Bonnie Raitt.
No, it wasn't Bonnie Raitt. It's a black girl.
Annika Chambers.
That's it.
Annika Chambers.
Which is Anika, by the way. It's Anika Chambers. Anika. I had to be corrected several Anika. Times.
Was she with Ego Prado Band? She's touring with them right now.
She lives in Houston, and there's this artist there named Tamika. I'll have to look her up, too. She's like, they call her the soul queen of Austin.
Right.
And she had invited Anika Chambers to come open for her. So it was, and Anika was pretty excited because it was... again, April knows her.
Mm-hmm.
We talked.
Yeah.
She was really excited because she tours all the time, but she hadn't really kind of broken into Austin, so it was a big deal for her.
Well, Austin is like Nashville and Memphis.
Right.
Because you go through there and you see all these people and you don't really know. I went to Austin one time in my life, and I went down their main strip, whatever they call it, kind of like
Sixth Street.
I got to set in with some groups. Of course, I'll never go anywhere without my harps in my pocket. And this was like 2002 or 3.
Oh,
man. And I was going to a gig in San Antonio the next day, and I ended up playing with all these old country acts that my dad raised me up on, had booked a gig. But I didn't, you know, then this guy said, man, you need to go over to Anton's. So there's this three Hispanic guys that are killing it over there. And said, if you like blues, you need to go see them. So I go over there. We listen that night. I come home, you know, a week or two later. I'm going to work one morning, and they announced this new group, Los Lonely Boys, How Far Is Heaven?
Yeah.
I thought,
that's
the guys I just saw two
weeks ago. Los Lonely Boys,
Of course, that's when it all hit for them, you know. But that's the way it is here in Memphis or Nashville.
Right.
You see some of these people, and you don't... You know, if I had known all the people before I went, I'd have got a lot more pictures and a lot more video.
You know, for sure. But, you know, I want to touch upon this with the tech. You know, we were talking about this renaissance of the blues, and I know Rick and I've been doing this show for a while now. I say Rick and I, he started it. He's
26 years this weekend.
He did it way more than I did in 2017. 26 years.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
But no, just in the last 6 or 7 years that we've been doing this.
Yeah.
Like when we started it, I mean, Mark, tell me if I'm wrong, but it kind of felt like a Like, blues was kind of a, I mean, it was here, but it wasn't, I'm not saying we changed anything, by the way, either.
Yeah, it had been beat up a bit. It, I mean,
quite a bit. And yeah.
It was a bit bloodied and a little rough, and people didn't think much about it, you know, because it was just like, oh, it's Memphis, you know.
I think it was post 2008. You know, there was a reason for people to be singing the blues, but
right.
But as a genre and as, you know, Memphis always kind of got up, it just felt like it was not where it is today. I think the networking, the technology, your point about, like, we're not trying to do that old thing anymore.
Well, that rock and roll is dead.
Well, but that's also why I think it's in everything, which is why it's kind of making a slow burn comeback. I mean,
sure.
I would hate it if blues came back the way, like, not came back, it's always been there. But if it hit like the way swing did, you know, for like that hot minute, like those 8 months in 1993 or whatever.
Right. Well, you know, and I also think too that, you know, when you look at things like what Nashville's producing,
right,
they've lost touch of the blues thing. So, and then you've got blues that are coming in, and they're also playing around with this whole Americana vibe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it is great.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, let's not call it what it's not. It's still blues.
Sure.
You know. It's rare now that we get a full record from any artist that is like 12 tracks of just blues.
Right.
You're going to get about half of it's blues, and the other half is going to be Americana, or it's going to be.
And the reason why is, as an artist, and Tyler and I have talked about this a couple times, you can't go on there and slow blues them to death all night long.
Right.
You got to have some upbeat, and you can't.
You got some boogie
Sally
in there,
them all night.
Right.
God, you know, yeah, all that is great, man. That's. I mean, but nobody's going to do that any better than what was done before.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with doing The Thrill Is Gone. But if you go in there and do you, or add yourself to that song,
right?
And you know your people that's coming out now. That of course, you know, I've always been a fan of North Mississippi All Stars. I was here when they started back in the early, I guess it was probably the mid to late '90s when we were coming down here in '97. We placed third finalist in the IBC, and that year it was Steve Patterson and I. We are the original Little Boys Blue. It was at the New Daisy, and there were 40 acts in the IBC that year. Of course,
right.
Now it's 300 acts. But then they didn't separate the acts. And we were competing. At that time, it was the Bill Street Blues Society, and Dennis Brooks was involved. I think he was the president that year. Dennis ended up booking us a lot. Jay Sheffield was booking us. But he was booking Reba, and, of course, Billy Gibson had started a new group called the Junkyard Men. And they were all – and then here comes the North Mississippi All-Stars. We kind of got in that package. Michael Burks, he was booking Michael Burks. Sean Costello, the year we came, won it. And then the next year we came back. But they didn't separate the duos and the groups. So we had to come in and compete with anybody that was in the competition. And the year that we came with Sean, I mean, we just got blew away. I mean, Sean won it. He was 14. He was a prodigy.
Right.
So we thought we're going to go back one more time next year and try it. And we did, and we ended up winning the Bill Street and placing third finalist in the IBC. But we were the only duo in the whole competition at the IBC that year.
Huh.
Everybody else, but Luther Allison gave us our award that year. But that was a lot, you know. We went from 40 acts to 100 to 300.
And now,
So I'm telling you how old I am, but we, you know, this is about my fourth or fifth trip, but it never gets old. It's fun. Man. But it has changed a lot.
Oh, sure it has. Yeah. But I think it's changed in a good way.
It's intense now.
Yeah, you got, the talent has stepped up. You're seeing a lot of younger artists that are stepping into this going, hey, I like this.
Right.
Who was it? One of the Kimbrough, was it Cam? I think it was Cam Kimbrough. He was like, yeah, I don't know if I could play my granddaddy's music. And there was like, you know, I'm used to doing, you know, some other stuff. I'm doing a little bit of rap. I'm doing this. And he realized that he could play blues. He felt more comfortable with it as if it was in his blood. And he's like, well, yeah. So he released that record, Head for the Hills.
Yes.
And it's a tremendous.
It's awesome, man. And yeah, all that North Mississippi stuff has evolved. And if you look at it, it's kind of get into some. It's the North Mississippi stomp stuff, but then it's kind of getting a little bit of touch of hip hop. RL, one of RL's albums when they added some.
Come Inside? Is that what it, was it Come Inside?
Yeah, I think so, man.
And there was and another was, one that they had
Tyler
done.
Tyler can elaborate on that. He played with which Burks?
With Dwayne.
Did you?
Dwayne, yeah.
2 months.
And the Mississippi Mafia.
Well, even that John
Hux. His project, dude. I didn't last too many games.
Yeah. It's the John Alex Mason cat out of Colorado. I know he's not with us anymore, but he had one of the Burnsides rapping on one of his blues albums. He used to play down on Bill Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, yeah, it makes sense. It's evolution, right? Well, you know, and we've said this before. Right.
Sure. It is evolving, yeah.
But it's also, I think the world is evolving. I mean.
Well, sure it is.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, Like you were talking about artists having all this different. I think genre. Genre is just a box that record stores put shit in to sell.
But there's
to,
no record stores. Yeah, there's no record stores out of that. Yes.
Exactly. So yeah, you don't have to be straight blues, or you can throw a reggae right. track on your album.
Sure.
You know, that's what you're feeling.
Well, you know, and everybody has their styles. You know, we feel like we're probably as much Americana as we are blues when we go out and do a show on Bill or wherever. The Tennessee album, As Little Boys Blue, was definitely a blues Americana. It was not, we had a, you know, you heard the Health Insurance Blues that Tyler and I did. I mean, it's a lot of Americana. I mean, that's just us. That's what we, look, we're white guys from Jackson, Tennessee. We grew up in Rockabilly Town,
right.
under the Carl Perkins influence. So we're going to have that, to, you know.
For sure.
But, you know.
It's just enough of a twist to piss the purist off. And
sure
that's
it
what I like
sure
about it.
So if those five or six guys don't show up and the other 40 or 50 do.
Right, and the other 40 or 50 over there paying guests to come
okay
into the show. Yeah. Your anger is going to kill me. Oh, I get it. How about a tune? How about
Tyler's a huge fan of Robert Johnson, and, you know, so.
But before this thing you have on your harp, you showed it to me before he got
yeah
here.
Yeah, it's a harp wah.
A harp wah. That's what
oh,
that
no
beer
way
can is for,
yeah,
too.
And I built this one. I made this one a couple of months before this guy came out. It was really weird. And this was out of Mick Ultra can. And somebody said, man, you ought to patent it. Well, like 2 days later, this guy's advertising out of Canada that he's coming out with a harp wah. I said, well, that's just what I did. But
oh,
so,
man.
The guy's named Raleigh Platt, or Rolly Platt, it's R-O-L-Y. And he's a great harmonica player. He's more of a jazzy blues player. Yeah. But he's got a great product. He's got it patented. And so I sent him a message and said, hey, when you get it out, I want it. He sent it to me 3 or 4 weeks ago. And but, you know, it sounds different than mine, but mine does the same thing. And like I said, if we drink enough of these Miller Lights, I can furnish everybody one before I leave. I brought my duct tape.
You know? There you go. So,
yeah. Everybody's getting a harp wah tonight. I feel like Oprah. Everybody's getting a harp wah. You're getting a harp wah. Jeff, you're getting a harp wah with,
yes,
with that A harp you gave away.
So we're going to do some hot tamales?
Yeah, we can do
it. Oh, hot tamales. Oh, yeah. Little Robert Johnson. Hell yeah. Let's get into it.
Thank you.
God damn.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. Right. That's wonderful. Yes. How about that? How about a tune, fellas?
Let's do it, man.
What do you want to play?
We're going to do a song we wrote called 6 Foot Down. It's actually going to be on our new Little Boys Blue album. It's coming out on Vistone, but this is a song that Tyler and I actually started playing before.
Have you produced that record yet? Have you
done? Yeah, it's done.
It's done.
We recorded it. Well, there's two tracks that we had left over from the Tennessee album from Brad Webb's.
Right, in Memphis.
And then the rest of it was recorded at Highland House Studios in Jackson and then mixed and mastered by our guy down in Muscle Shoals, Don Shrigley.
Yeah.
I was telling you earlier that engineered the Greg Allman album, that the last album, The Southern Blood, I think, that's out now.
Yeah.
And he did our Tennessee album, so we ended up sending the tracks down there. But it's a done deal, and hopefully it'll be out maybe by March or April.
Oh, good.
That's what we're working
good.
On.
That's a good time for it. Just
well,
time
and to... one of the tracks we cut, I cut with John Holiday at his house. It's called Going Back to Memphis, and we're going to try to do a video on that one. And it's about Memphis and Bill Street, and so we're going to get some video footage while everybody's in town the week of the IBC.
Oh yeah,
and
try
to put some video together with the people,
sure,
and make a a little story about Memphis. So sure. we're excited about it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Excited about it. And this was called 6 Foot Down. This will be the first track on my album, and we do it a little different, naturally solo duo, than we will with the band. But this is the way we do it right here.
All right.
Myself a grave. I'm gonna lay right down and die. I'm gonna dig myself a grave. I'm gonna lay right down and die. Yeah, you know the woman I've been loving long. Yeah, she run off with another guy. Call this funeral man. I'm gonna set him on my belly thing. I'm gonna call this funeral man. I'm gonna sell all my belly thing. I'm gonna tell him, come on out to the graveyard. Kick a little dirt on me, Lord, when you can. Down.
Nicely done. Nice. Baritone guitar on that, right?
Yeah, man.
Whew, man, you're that getting crunch. More savage on that harp every time yeah. I see you. It's like you improve every time you Thank every time you turn around. You know, that. Not that what you did in the past was anywhere, you know, bad. But man. Jesus, man, it's just lighting it up. You must play constantly.
I do play a lot. And of course, I build on harps. I've been doing that for about 10 years.
Yeah, I've known that. That was kind of a that's kind
yeah,
of a
that was kind
thing.
Of a have-to thing, man. I had buckets of them sitting around out of tune and, you know, keep buying $75.
Right. You don't want to throw them away and do
I didn't
something
want to
with
throw
them.
Throw them away. And I got endorsed by Seidel, which is the oldest harmonica manufacturer. Everybody doesn't know that. They yep. think Hohner is, but they were actually in business before Hohner, and they're both out of Germany.
They're like nearby villages or something.
They are
aren't they?
Nearby yeah. villages. I think Eric Hughes is signed with them, Brandon Santini. Mm-hmm. But they're a great mm-hmm. company. But they came out with a steel reed harp, and that's what I'm playing. And I didn't trash all my Hohners. And I told them when I did that, I'm not going to go clean out my harp case and throw away all my
yeah.
my favorites, because some of them last, some of them don't. But they're easy to work on. I've got to where I can replace my reeds. And they build a harp now where you can literally take the parts apart, so you don't have to buy the whole harp.
So they're designed to be repaired.
Modular, absolutely. Yeah. That's the whole key now.
Unlike a John Deere tractor.
Yeah. But they had to do that because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, there was a time when the harp was a cheap instrument. It somehow in the last decade and a half or 2 decades, it just now they're like, you know, it's $40 to get a marine band.
Yeah. A cheap harp is 40 yeah. or 50 yeah. bucks. I mean, you know, just the Special 20s, I don't want to call them cheap, but like the Big Rivers and some of the lower
right.
models that Hohner makes, even the harps you buy at Cracker Barrel that are Hohners are 10 bucks now, you know. I'm sorry.
Right. Well, plastic ones.
And they play. I mean, but, you know, to get what I would think a quality harp, of course, the marine band is like the godfather. That was the.
But they even made that modular, didn't they?
They still make the 1896 marine band with nails,
yeah.
but people literally buy them because they're cheap, and we take them apart and drill holes on them and put them modular.
Right.
So that's what I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many people that make things now with 3D imaging.
Oh, yeah, the 3D printing and things.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Guys that make like the combs that I have here, like these are Corian, like a countertop in a house. They literally take these harps. And they put them in a 3D image machine, and they make them.
Huh.
And, you know, they're slick surface, they're loud, they're ambient.
It looks like a golden harmony.
Yeah, and that's a golden melody. And then what I did is I had a buddy of mine powder coat it, and then I took that center place, that comb, and then I installed reeds that I did reed work on. And, you know, they're just like... they're loud.
That is loud, yeah.
And they're so airtight. And the big thing that came on the scene in the harp world is when people started hearing Howard Levy playing, when he was playing with Bela Fleck, he was getting all these notes.
Oh, yeah.
He was getting all these chromatic notes out of a diatonic harmonica. Then the next guy that I remember, and I started hearing a guy named Jason Ritchie, which a lot of people know. He's a modern-day harp player.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Gusso, who is down at Mississippi now. And of course, YouTube came on the scene, and they started talking about overblows and overdraws. Well, what that is that there's notes in this here harmonica that weren't supposed to be there that are there.
Right.
And it's the jazz notes or the half notes that you literally get on the chromatics that you see all the
right.
the old blues guys playing because they couldn't get the note, but now you can. It's a... Is that, nah, that flat on the top end, you can get on the bar. So I can get all the half notes now, which opens up a whole new world.
So you're doing that then with your tongue then? Is that how that,
well,
where that comes
in? With tongue and air pressure. Yeah. So when you do that...
so you're either over or underblowing.
That, like a jazz lick, like an overblown...
forcing the reed to bend more than it was.
I'm making the reed go in opposite direction.
Oh.
It's the opposite of a draw reed. So it's almost like the bend that they do on the top end of a harp when you
right,
hear a guy go.
Right.
I make that reed flip the other direction, which gives you like four or five different more notes up the harp.
Yeah. and doing something it ain't designed to do.
And so what I do is you got guys now that custom make harps, as I do.
Yeah.
I literally take the reeds and I put them under a light box with a microscope, and I make the tolerance so tight that when you blow air in it and want it to go, it's got to do something or it's going to pop off. So they make it so tight. Now, a lot of guys, I talked to John Nemeth at the BMAs last year, and I said, hey, man, you know, what harps you playing? And he said, man, I don't like all them custom harps. They all stick on me.
Well, you got guys that play
really hard. I used to be a really hard player. Now I'm a really controlled player because, you know, you don't have to play. I mean, this is aluminum.
Right.
I'm not barely breathing now. I mean, I could sit there and hold that note all day long, and people go, man, you're going to hyperventilate. Well, really, you trap your air, and it's just, it's a cool thing.
It's almost
a
lot like, of people like circular breathing like a lot of what a sax player
is. It really is. Yeah, that, and so with or the John overdraws, Popper. Overblows, you got these guys coming out of the woodwork playing jazz, and they're freaking people out because they're doing it on a 10-hole harp instead of a chromatic now.
So chromatic sales are down, I'm thinking.
Well, they're not. I mean, the chromatics, a chromatic's got a cool sound.
Oh, yeah, it does.
But then you got side L coming out with the answer to a chromatic, and it's a double low tune B flat. It's two octaves down than the regular B flat. So, you know.
It was still ringing when you pulled it away from your face.
It's so cool, man. So, you know, you can be playing a song and switch harps, and they go, what's he playing up there, man? It should sound like this big, long chromatic that the Monocats played, and it's this 10-hole diatonic. And so that's what's cool about that kind of thing. So I'm a harp nerd, man. I can't help
it. You know, what's interesting to me is that John Nemeth, like, he had a C harp on him, April, and that was it, and he was... But he was playing it in different keys.
Sure. What you do is it's different. Harmonica's kind of like sex. You got different positions.
Right.
So, yeah, you can do first, second, or third.
Yeah, but when you get to that point, you got to know what you're transposing a little bit.
She won't know.
Yeah, but it's a little bit more. Yeah, right. Oh, I bet the ladies love a harp player.
Oh, I bet they do. Oh, God, do that again.
So, yeah, if you're dating a woman that knows how to play all the positions on the harp, man,
there you go.
Got to know when to suck and you got to know when to blow. That's, you know.
And she may overblow.
You might. Yeah, if you're lucky.
Because, hey, you know what? As long as she bends.
As long as she bends, and then you're good.
She can bend your reed.
That's right. There you go.
And tongue block.
Tongue blocking. Yeah, well, yeah. Harp lessons from Radio Memphis.
So if you were trapped on a desert island and you had the tools, could you fashion your own harmonica?
Not from any...
out of coconuts and bamboo?
I mean,
probably the best thing you could do is maybe make the Fife band down in Corsto. You could probably hollow out and figure out how to make a flute or something.
Yeah, make a whistle.
Same concept. I mean, it's a wind instrument, but... except these are reeded instruments, but you know.
So have you got into the 3D printing at all?
I haven't, but I've got people that can do it for me, you know, and I'm not.
Because that's gotten really cheap, man.
It's gotten cheap, and it's gotten very popular on a lot of things.
Yeah, think about it on harmonica.
And they can make it very precise, man. I mean, the combs, the stuff that you're getting now, they can make it so close tolerance type stuff. And that's the key with harmonica. I mean, You've just got a very little space for that reed to flip up and down. So the closer you can bring it in and keep it when you put air to it, the you don't have to play that hard.
It's the key to those steel reeds, man.
Yeah.
You know.
But you still have to have tone. I mean, you got guys out there.
Well, yeah.
And hey, we got in the harp world, we got the harp Nazis just like we got the blues Nazis.
Sure.
You got these guys that want to talk about, James Cotton's got the best tone. Hey, they all got tone. You know, I saw a thing posted the other day. Well, I like Junior Wells, but his tone was thin. Hey, man, Junior Wells is a great harmonica player. I don't care if he sounded like he played through a tin can, you know. So, you know, I don't get into that
either. But the thing with tone, too, is that that's going to hinge a lot on what type of amp or mic that you're playing through as well, right?
Hey, man.
And the music,
you know,
yeah.
You can't play a Bob Dylan song with a Muddy Water tone.
Right.
You know? I mean,
right,
you know?
Right.
But, you know, this is what's interesting to me about the harmonica, and I guess why I've always wanted to play it.
Right.
Even though I haven't put the time in. I suck. Which you're supposed to do, but sometimes, but you're supposed to put
and
a lot
blow,
of time. Yeah. But you're supposed to put a lot of time into it. I just haven't. I never do. I got one, but guitar players, like we talk about tone all the fucking time. I mean, it's you know, pedals, it's amps, it's tubes, it's not tubes, it's solid state, it's you know, and I think harmonica players are the only other musician that really gets that on the level of this is the instrument and that's part of the equation, and this is what it's going through, and that is another part of the equation.
It's putting a puzzle together.
Right, right. And it's then if you mics, run pedals in between it, or mics. Or...
And, man, you can spend a fortune, and I have. I mean, I've got
oh, yeah.
I mean, look, I mean, I could tell you, but, you know, I'm a Harp King guy. Harp King was, in my opinion, one of the best modern-day harmonica amps ever produced, and it's not produced anymore, and I've got two of them, and they're very expensive.
Right.
But what's crazy is he came out with a pedal after that. He figured out, well, I can't build these amps. You know, Rod Piazza was the guy, was his guy that modeled those amps in the 90s. And everybody's right. thinking, where in the hell is he getting that tone, man? I remember seeing him at B.B. King. He did a live album at B.B. King's. And everybody was trying, and he would literally hide the back of his amp where you couldn't look in it and see what he had in it.
Oh, really?
It was that secret until John Kinder started making that particular amp. Of course, everybody's you know, the Fender Bassman is like the godfather of the blues harp amps,
right.
You know, other than the Mascos and stuff in the 50s with Little Walter. But I'm talking about modern day, you know, super reverbs, that kind of thing, before
right.
they started making a harp amp geared for harp instead of guitar. And but he came out with this pedal. Well, now, I mean, I'm sitting here and I've got $15,000 worth of old amps at home, and I'm bringing my solid state $500 amp.
That thing is brilliant too. That
it's
thing's
awesome,
and it looks like the deck of the Enterprise.
It's a Quilter amp, and I run it through a tube preamp with a pedal,
yeah.
And it sounds as good as my $1,000 Gibson G20. That's 1952.
That's the second one I've seen. Ron Crowder brought one down from RC and the Nightshades up in Kentucky. He brought one down and ran his guitar through the thing. I was like, wow.
Yeah. And you control. I mean, it sounds good at a low volume. It sounds good at a high volume. That's
oh yeah, great. Yeah. It's all like. Middle ground with this thing, yeah. And it's fantastic. It's error proof.
Where a tube amp, you've got to adjust it to the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to get so much volume to make it break up.
We're getting nerdy here. We're going
go for it. You
I've
know,
got this this Vox Valvetronics VT12. It's a bedroom amp, but it's got a tube in the preamp, and it's got modeling on the back end of it. But it's also got this knob that dials the wattage up, so it'll go from like 12 to 20 watts. So you can
really,
yeah. So and it's, you know,
it's a variable amp.
I got it as a practice amp. I found it at Bargain Hunt of all places.
Yeah,
but Nighthawk played through it.
Really?
He styled it into like that Fender blues
Robert
sound.
Nighthawk.
Yeah.
When they had the Mississippi.
He made me think, oh, that thing could be a harp amp.
When Robert and Joe were together, what was the group they had, the duo in the 90s? Mississippi. Was it the Mississippi Sheiks or something?
Was it the Sheiks? It may have been.
Anyway, he was one of the first guys around
here.
I saw. Yeah. I saw him out at the Ag Center one time
when
I first started playing harp, because I didn't pick it up till 91 or 92. I was 30. Yeah, I've only been playing for 25 years now, but I was like 30 years old when I started. But I went to see them one day, and yeah, he always plays something old. You know, he's got all these old amps, and he inspired me. So if he's listening tonight, Robert, you inspired
me. He's a man. He's a
he's always got these cool amps. I've seen him break out. We played last year down at the Bonafide.
I remember that.
He was there with Reba, and he had I don't know what he had. It was an old tweed 50s tweed
amp.
It sounded awesome, man. Yeah.
He when I bought a harp a couple of years ago, like, I'm gonna start playing it, and he said, man, you're better off just developing a crack habit. I said, what are you talking about?
It's the truth.
He said, because
you're gonna spend a lot of money.
So what are you talking about? Like, I mean, it's $30. We said, yeah, and they blow out.
See, Tyler's smart enough to be quiet because his wife might be listening tonight, because he's not really going to talk about how many amps he's got.
Well, it's not
or how many guitars,
pedals,
all the gear that goes with it. Yeah,
I went through a pedal addiction phase.
Not
like, honestly, the guys I was playing with were like, how many damn overdrive and distortion pedals do you need? Like, well, you know, this is my lead.
I need all of them. Yeah. Don't you understand? I need all of them, woman.
That was a rock band, though. Blues, you don't have to quite lay all those pedals down.
No, not at all.
I have a question that maybe kind of, I don't know if it's difficult or just, I know, maybe awkward to a certain extent. And it deals with the performance that you guys were going to lay out. Some of the criteria involves, of course, the time issue, which is a big deal. And then there's the creativity, which you guys certainly have. Everything that you guys are doing is, I think, personally dead on. There are those that will question cover tunes. And you guys have done some Robert Johnson. You did at the thing that I saw.
Right.
Is that an issue in your mind at all, or is it that you are taking these tunes and turning them into yours specifically? I mean, is there a line in that, or are they, or I mean, how is it that you guys feel about playing that type of stuff?
Well, you know, when we did the local competition, naturally we came in and did what we normally do with some covers, and we did maybe one or two originals. Tonight we've done all originals except for one,
right,
which is what we're working on now. We're getting ready to do another cover tune, but one of the rules this year, I don't think they frown completely on doing covers. You got to make it your own.
One of the rules
this year, you got to announce it. You've got to give the artist credit that wrote it.
That makes sense. Composer. That makes sense.
So, you know, naturally it's just best to say, hey, this is one of our songs I'm getting ready to do, and then the next one if it's a cover. But, you know, I've heard, I mean, a lot of bands won. Ghost Town won. I mean, you know, or
sure.
Blast High. I mean, everybody does covers.
Well, that's just it. Know. Blues is so fluid.
Sure, man.
And that it was Thorogood. George Thorogood had said back in the late 80s, I'm not writing any more music because all the good stuff has already been written.
Right.
And he would take these riffs and these feelings from other artists, and even though you knew exactly, like, some of the John Lee Hooker stuff that he would, and then of course he releases Get a Haircut, Get a Real Job, you know.
And then we knew why he wasn't writing songs.
but I know that becomes, that may be a sticking point to like purists out there or in dealing with judges now, and as you progress through next week.
Right.
Are you eliminating any covers? Or are you just going to stick with the
rules? We're going to probably do maybe two.
I got you.
Out of the set. So in 25 minutes, if we do four originals and two covers, I think we'd be good. You know, we could probably do the whole thing original. I mean, we've got enough original music.
Right, right.
But there's things that, especially Tyler does, you know, so well. He's got his own way of doing the Crossroads, and that's what we're getting ready to do.
Because it's very different.
And it's a different style.
Yeah. I would argue that it's not calling them covers is not really fair, because like jazz and the blues, particularly when you talk about Robert Johnson, you have standards.
You have songs that
honestly, to play this genre of music, you better know how to play. And then not only better, even perform it, you got to bring it. I think that's a big tradition in the blues.
If it was a bluegrass competition and they told you couldn't play Salty Dog or Will the Circle Being Broken, nobody would show up.
That's true.
I mean, hey, man, come on. You know,
we're not going to recreate what's already been there. But there's standards,
sure.
and that's, you know, if you can't pay homage to that, homage.
But this goes back full circle to where we started tonight. Yeah. But you got the guys that are coming out and taking that stuff and going to, you know, to a different type of blues or an evolving blues. It's got a little rock tinge to it, maybe a little hip-hop tinge to it.
Right.
You know, there's so many new artists coming out that are blues-based, and I love it. You know, we were talking about the new Billy Gibbons album that came out last year. I like it. You know, I mean, it's a Texas blues kind of thing, but he's got some new wave. We're talking about Samantha Fish and the North Mississippi All-Stars and her new album that Luther just helped her produce, or Lightning Malcolm, you know, and people like that. I mean, look, man, R.L. Burnside opened another door. I mean, you know, North Mississippi stuff hadn't been here. It's been down there forever. But I didn't get turned on to it till the mid-90s. You know, a lot of people didn't get turned on to it till they figured out that the Sopranos song was his.
right.
So, I mean, come on.
Yeah. You know. Well, you know, I was, Avril, my girlfriend, we were listening to Beth Hart today because she's a big Beth Hart fan.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the name of the song, but it was on shuffle, whatever. But it was, she was like, man, that guitar lick sounded really familiar. And I was like, yeah, that's All Your Loving Is Loving. That whole song is... Yeah. Note for note. I mean, you can sing the verse right over it, you know. Yeah. And so I did. She's like, oh, my God. She's like, I didn't realize, like, you know, it's, I guess everything's been done. I said, well, no, yes and no. Yeah. you know. But
well,
yeah.
Burnside is a good example because he took Rolling and Tumbling,
right,
and did it like 50 different ways with different lyrics.
He did, man.
But it's a type of music with a defined formula.
No, it's unlike anything else out there, really. You
know? But so, well, that's like saying jazz. What's the formula to jazz? Well, it's
talk to Miles Davis. Thelonious Monk.
You've got to have your standards around to with which to bend it and break the rules and just do shit that has nothing to do with the standards and then, you know.
And to make it your own.
Right.
And I think, then it also goes back to the fact that a lot of these guys, and I don't know, Tyler may have educated himself. I know my son that's been playing with me the last 3 or 4 years that's not playing right now because he's in school. But when he came home finally at 18 or 19, he'd been playing all this crashing rock since he was 13. Right. And started talking about John Mayer's new song called Crossroads. And I said, Hold up. It's time for us to have the talk. You know, so I carried him in a
room.
That's
a true blues father right there.
Told his mom to leave us alone.
Yeah.
And I pulled up things. And then, of course, naturally, then he started playing music with me. But, you know, what you're getting ready to hear right now is the influences that Tyler has gotten. You know, he's a young man, still in his 20s, right?
No, I'm 31.
Are you 31? Well, yeah, he's getting to be an old man. But yeah. I still got him beat. I got a son that's older than him. So, you know, but hearing his influence and all the things that he likes to play. And
well, if the argument is you take that song and make it your own, yeah. How do you do that? How do you make it your own?
You play what you feel. And you take their lyrics and you take what they built, and it's like buying an old house. And you think, man, I love this old house, but when I get it, I think I'm going to add a front porch to it, and I'm going to put a back porch to it, and I'm going to repaint it. I wouldn't want to ever rebuild it because
it's still that house. Yeah,
I couldn't build it like this,
right,
man.
Right.
You know, there's no way, and I couldn't afford to build it like this. But what I want to do is put me in it, and that's what you got to do with the music, in my opinion. So when I hear some guy come out and I don't care if they're doing Tush, ZZ Top. If they do it their way, I don't care. I don't care.
Amen, brother. I got
Freebird.
You.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, if they do it their way and it's cool and it's something different, and park up, you know.
Yeah, it's like the cover bands that
do a version of their favorite song in their way, then try to do it just like the record.
Right. Yeah, like the cover bands that play here in town. You know, they're just a jukebox, and they're entertaining the crowd because they want to hear, you know, an Allman Brothers tune or whatnot.
There's
and they
definitely
do it.
A talent and a discipline to doing that.
Oh, sure.
You know, but that's it's not the same thing as taking the standard and making your own.
Yeah, because you got to work it. You got to work it and rework it and rework it.
You know, it's different. It's different being a live, living jukebox than it is, I guess, paying homage to the, like you said, the stuff you listened to when you were learning how to play. Like, you didn't just become a guitar player in a vacuum or a harmonica player in a vacuum, and you certainly didn't become a blues artist in a vacuum.
We don't want to be karaoke musicians.
Oh.
I guess, you know, I mean, that's the way I look at it. Not that I don't like, and there are some songs that, I mean, in the heart world, just like in anything, these guys get stuck on... you know, Big George Smith's Boogie or Lil Walter's. Lil Walter's got so many tunes everybody wants to copy, and there's nothing wrong with that.
So
there's nothing wrong with that. I just don't get into that because I hear it, I love it, I'm going to play it, but I'm going to play it my way.
Right.
And I may not play it just like him. I may not can play it just like him.
So you're talking about hearing just about, you're doing an Elmore James tune, right?
We're getting ready to do a Robert Johnson.
Oh, Robert Johnson.
We're going to do Crossroads.
Crossroads, okay.
We're going to do it the way Tyler feels it. When I first heard him do it, I thought, man, that is cool.
Because, you know, Clapton took it and did some really incredible stuff with it, you know. And the original Robert Johnson is Led Zeppelin took it, you know, at least part of it.
he does it in a minor tone, kind of haunty. And I like that. I like.
So you change the key in it. You change the tempo. You change the feel of it. Well, then let's hear it. Then let's hear what this is all about.
Calling
felt a calling within me.
Okay, I get it. I get it. That's a good. It's a good example of that. It's owning. Yeah. It's owning the tune because it is so different than what Robert Johnson would have done. You know, in a heartbeat, in the minor, incredibly. That's haunting.
Yeah.
Creepy. But that's what he was. You know, Johnson.
I didn't think you meant Tyler.
Well, you know where we're at. Yeah, you know.
That was really good. And also on the baritone guitar again.
No, actually,
that was not the baritone.
It's a standard, but it's tuned down.
Ah, that's what's up. Okay.
So I'm using standard guitar tuned down to open D, the Elmore James thing,
right.
And the baritone. And what it does is creates the gap in between the guitar mid range and his harmonica. So a normal standard tuning, I find it kind of fights.
And I went under the octave. I played a low C harp in third position, which makes it in a minor.
So you're not stepping on each other in the
same
frequency.
Yeah, normally
you play the same note and it won't get muddy.
That's right. You were playing in D, right? Yeah, so normally anybody playing in D would have played a G harp.
Yeah.
Well, I played a C harp, which is the next chord over, which puts you in the third chord of a harp, which makes it a minor tune.
So, Mark, can you get the whiteboard and wheel it in here? I'm just
going to get it's like NASA engineering behind it.
Yeah. So it's like the five chord really on the tune. You got what would be D, G, and C, right?
The blue note.
Okay, so I'm playing the blue note.
Oh, the blue note.
That's
right.
If I was major,
that's the devil's note.
I play a completely different harp, and it was a major tune. So. That's what makes it different. I mean,
really,
you should, yeah.
It's the devil's note.
No, I didn't know that though. So you'd play a different harp.
I would have played a G. Yeah. If he would just been playing like a boogie woogie in D, I would have played in second position, which is a G. Which any harp player, that's what most blues harp players would play in second position.
See there it goes. Boom.
That's where the bending and the overblow comes.
Right.
Where you know these. In a minor tune, if you go to a different position, that's why you were talking about John Namath coming in playing one harp. He probably played it in two or three different positions.
Right, yeah, he's transposing the shit in his head.
He was
which
transposing,
again,
you know,
that's where
he
my
might
mind
have played
is
in three different keys and never changed harps, which is, you know, he's good at that, man.
You're over here giving up your playbook over here right in front of the audience.
Yeah, but I have to apologize to you and every other harp player I've ever known because I've always thought,
Well,
those guys just, they blow it.
It's
out there. They know what's up.
You can get on YouTube. I mean, it's out there. And that's what was frustrating in the 90s. When I came down here, when I started playing harp in 93, I started coming to Bill Street. The first guy that was nice enough to let me on stage was David Bowen. When they, the King Bees at BB Kings, when they were backing up Ruby Wilson. And
I
got where I would come down every Saturday afternoon. They'd play the early show, and then they'd stay here. Then they'd come back at night and back up Ruby. And David and I just got to know each other, and we'd do this. They'd always do Lowrider, so he and I would do dueling harps on Lowrider.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the coolest thing. But he was the first guy to let me on stage, and I met Billy Gibson, you know, when we were coming down over the years. But other than just a few nice guys like that, nobody would tell you anything. I mean, I met some great harp players here, but, you know, don't ask them their secrets. And a lot of that maybe was they were protecting their turf because that's what they did for a living.
Yeah.
So they're going to give away their secrets.
Guitar players did that for generations. They would create their own tunings, their own open tunings, and not tell anybody about that. You know, and that was how they, I guess, would copyright their own material.
Right.
It's kind of hard to, you know, to recreate.
What I'm saying tonight is all over the internet. I learned it from the internet a lot. Right. I learned it from other players, but you still got to put it in your own. You know,
right.
if I learn Spanish, I'm still going to have to speak it in my own country slang, you know. So, I mean, that's the way of playing harp. I mean, there's no secrets now.
George Dudley just said it was a great twist.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's out there. No, that's not. That's brilliant. What you got? You thinking you may do that in your performance?
You know, I think so because I think he does a great job of it, you know. And so I like hearing him sing instead of me. So, But yeah, man, yeah. I think we will. A lot of it is we're gonna have enough music to see what the competition is doing. If we get to a gig and everybody's doing all original, then we're gonna do all original. But
so you're gonna be flexible enough to kind of go with it.
Yeah, we've got a lot of tunes, man. I mean, we're just but you know, I don't want to end up doing boogie woogie or 1-4-5 blues all night long. I want to throw something in that's a little different.
Well, yeah, you've been in this situation before with the IBC.
Right.
How much of the audience participation are you going to rely on, or are you just going to kind of put your head down and just blow through this? Pardon the pun.
A lot of it depends on the upbeat, but you know, the solo duo thing is so much geared to where you get chosen. You know, we played the couple times I was in it a few years ago, we drew the Pig on Bill, which was a great room. Everybody was quiet. And then we made it to the semifinals, and it was at Silky O'Sullivan's, and you couldn't hear shit in there.
No, you can't.
Everybody's there to get drunk and talk to each
other. The crowd was so loud, and G Weevil won it that year. And I'm not saying he didn't deserve to win, but I'm saying he came in there with a super reverb amp and a stomp box and blew everybody away.
Yeah.
And you
it was the loudest band won that
You could
day.
Hear him. Yeah. He was a one-man band with a stomp box, and man, he was just like a band being up there, and nobody overcried. I mean, he turned up and jammed.
Yeah.
Where we're up there trying to play acoustic blues with acoustic guitar.
That's a bad venue to do acoustics.
It's murder.
Unless you're a grand piano.
Yeah, unless you're going to.
So, you know, a lot of it depends on whether, you know, we've played upstairs over the 152, the room up there.
Yeah.
We've played a couple different places. So a lot of it depends on where you get chosen on the solo duo.
So you're prepared for all of that, I assume.
Because I mean,
I've got my amp
that I've literally got on -1 right now in this room. So yeah, we're
prepared. Oh yeah, you'd knock the tiles off the place with that thing.
We're going to crank, man. I think you saw that at 152. We were able to get the volume up, and a lot of it depends on too the sound men. So hopefully they'll have good sound guys, but. Yeah, we're gonna stomp it away and see what happens.
Well, the judges they're not listening to the sound guy; they're listening to what you guys are doing.
But it's still about tone, and we're about tone, and hopefully to get the right harp tone or the right guitar tone. Like that song, it wouldn't have done us any justice to crank the amps up 2 or 3 more decibels in here to make that sound. We want it to sound. We want people to stop, kind of listen, and that's what that's why you're in a solo duo act. You're not there to play
for somebody's Saturday night date or whatever. Yeah.
You get a guy up there doing Reverend Gary Davis stuff, the crowd needs to be quiet and listen. You know, they need to listen because the guy may be the best picker you ever heard, but if they're serving drinks and telling jokes, so.
George just chimed back in. He says, all original here, only 1-4-5.
Yeah. Hey, nothing wrong with that.
No. Whatever works for him,
So they do it well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, nothing wrong with that at all.
It's the art. It's subjective.
It's what you can do and what you feel.
That's why it's hard to judge it.
Yeah.
It really is.
It really is.
The Broom Closet is your one-stop shop for all of your metaphysical supplies and gifts. We stock candles, herbs, gemstones, incense, salt lamps, and more. We also host monthly rituals and events for those looking to get together with like-minded people. And the Broom Closet is the only place you can get your cards read by me, Reverend Emily. I'm an ordained Wiccan minister and Reiki master. Book your next tarot reading and see what's in the cards for you. Discover conscious living and being connected to an awesome community. The Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop is located in downtown Memphis, or visit our online store at TheBroomCloset.com. The Broom Closet, where magic begins.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
The gentleman there sitting to your left,
yes,
Mr. Kyle Roberts, has joined us. He's been here before. I don't know. Were you here when he was in here before?
I don't recall.
It was sitting on top of like this terrible looking car. It was like hot pink. It was a hatchback. He was playing saxophone.
Checky.
Oh yeah. And I just got talking to him and he kind of introduced me to a whole bunch of music, and he gave me a CD case full of like jazz records and blues records, and I kind of got listening to that.
Oh yeah.
I really liked it, and I found Muddy Waters' album.
Uh-huh.
I listened to that on repeat till the grooves wore down, and just I loved it. And I just sort of, I had always wanted a guitar. My mom always said, "No, you're not going to use a guitar." And one year, I found one in my mom's friend's garage, and I asked if I could have it. They gave it to me. And that was a mistake, because now that's all I do.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Yeah, there you go. And you heard what's coming up next time. More from the IBC thing there with Mr. Kyle Roberts going to be on the program here next time out here on the old show from Radioland. So listen, there's that. And without belaboring, I don't want to keep you too much longer. Thank you so very much for being a part of the program and all of that good stuff. Please, in the meantime, take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. For God's sake, wash your hands, will you? Good God, you nasty people. Wash your damn hands and quit shooting each other. We'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.